So is there a bit of backtracking going on by central bankers? Jerome Powell, who seemed happy to expect cuts relatively soon, seems to be signalling that it's going to take longer. In fact, those are his very words. Whereas Andrew Bailey from the Bank of England seems to be positioning for a scenario where the Bank of England goes before the Fed, which was not the message a week or two ago. The latest IMF forecast might have a bit to do with that. We'll look at all of that, which is increasing US growth. And perhaps UK unemployment has a bit to do with it as well. It has moved up significantly. It says all still a movable feast, isn't it? It's Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, a small rise in the US dollar this morning. It's up a little over 0.1% on the DXY, but the Aussie is down 0.6%, down to 64 US cents from 66.3 last Tuesday. So that's getting close to a 3.5% fall in just over a week. Compared to that, most other currencies showed comparatively small moves today, although the yen fell 0.25%, so did the Canadian dollar. US stocks struggled to get into the green. In the end, only the Dow managed to stay there, closing up 0.2%. The S&P closed down 0.2%. The Nasdaq lost 0.1%. We saw bigger falls in Europe, though, 1.3% off the Euro Stoxx 50, 1.8% less for the FTSE 100. Bond yields continued their journey northward. 10-year Treasuries up another 6 basis points to 4.66%. It got very close to 4.7%, the highest yield for 10 years since November. And the obvious question, are we heading back to 5% for 10 years? UK 10-year gilts are up 6 basis points to 4.3%. 10-year bunds are up 5 basis points. Aussie 10 years yesterday rose 7 basis points to 4.33%. Then on futures overnight, a few basis points higher than that. And oil has retreated ever so slightly, 0.2% lower for WTI and Brent, which is hanging just below 90 a barrel. Gold is still rising, though. COMEX gold is up over 2,405, another 0.9% added today. The concern in the Middle East has been that is Israel planning to hit nuclear targets in Iran, which would be seen as a major escalation. So hopefully Netanyahu gets talked out of that. Everyone's trying to talk him out of it. But it's more Fed, less Middle East today. It's Rodrigo Catril from NAB in Sydney who is joining me. So Jerome Powell has been talking at the IMF. The latest data, he says, hasn't given him the confidence they need, and it's going to take longer to achieve that confidence. So I mean, even there was talk about maybe no cuts at all this year unless the economy takes a downturn. So this is a very different direction from, you know, even just a couple of weeks ago from Jerome Powell.
Morning, Phil. Yes. And if anything, is reaffirming the price action that we've seen in, you know, particularly in the rate space and the push or delay, if you like, of rate cut expectations. So I think it's an acknowledgement that, you know, we talk about this idea of what is a trend. And if you have two data prints, it's not enough to convince you that it's a new trend, if you like. But when you have three, then it becomes a bit more interesting. In the case of inflation in the US, that is being the situation, of course, that, you know, January, February printed a lot stronger, but now March has also revealed the sort of same pattern. So then now the Fed needs to acknowledge that this is not just a temporary, you know, volatility, if you like, in a downtrend, but actually is showing a persistence in price pressures in the US that is forcing them a bit of a rethink in terms of the outlook. So I think obviously the Powell's comments is now adding more fuel to this move up in yields that we've seen, you know, that has already been in place for a couple of, I would say for over a week now. And it essentially puts the market on notice that, you know, as you say, that for one, three rate cuts this year from the Fed look a little bit optimistic. And then there's obviously now the chance that there may not be rate cuts at all if the U.S. economy continues to perform as currently is doing.
So is this being compounded by the IMF forecast? Because they've upped their forecasts for the United States, haven't they? So 2.7% this year, which is quite a revision up, because it was 2.1%. And that is just in January. So, you know, just a few months ago, they've raised it by 0.6%.
Yes. I mean, one thing to note is that the IMF hasn't always been the best sort of leading indicator of change in growth forecast, but certainly it's made some headlines overnight. And it does make a point, you know, that the U.S. exceptionalism has the potential to extend into the whole of this year. And that, of course, is important for, you know, market perceptions in terms of relativities, which are obviously super relevant for currencies in particular. But I think that, as you say, the biggest takeaway is the big upgrade that they have done to the U.S. That is significant. And again, it's a reflection of how the consumer is performing, and also evidence that this big burst that we had in investment last year is actually continuing this year. So that is sort of, if you like, two growth engines that are still quite humming along quite nicely for the US, and favoring the idea that the US should grow up uptrend this year.
Well, interesting, isn't it? The data over the last 24 hours wasn't anything exceptional for the United States. The industrial production came in as expected, basically flat on the year. Manufacturing production was up 0.6% in March, down from 1.2% the month before. Building permits actually fell 4.3% in March. Month on month, housing starts were down 14.7%. You know, if you look at that, and I know, take your point, you know, you've got to have more than a couple of points to get a trend. But if you look at that as a 24-hour snapshot, that's not saying an economy that's running too hot, is it?
No. And if anything, you know, unlike the IMF, our narrative in terms of the US economic outlook is that, yes, we are starting for a very strong point when it comes to Q1. But when we look at leading indicators, we still think that the economy will slow down towards trend over the course of this year. And again, you know, we've spoken about those leading indicators of the labor market, where they've, you know, the cumulative effect of interest rate hikes that the Fed has delivered is starting to show some signs, and we think that it will eventually be reflected in a softening of the labor market. So our sense is that, yes, the U.S. is the outperforming economy at the moment, but certainly it's important to keep an eye on how we've seen improvements elsewhere, and also this idea that there are strong indicators suggesting that a slower growth should be expected over coming quarters in the U.S. too.
Right. So we've got bond yields, 10 years, sitting at 4.67% as we record this. Could it hit? Could they get back up to 5% again this year, do you think, before we start to see them coming down again?
Price action, you know, in the 10-year space tells you that, yep, there's definitely there's room for it to test 5% again, even from a technical perspective. You know, you look at the chart and there's a lot of, you know, free space, if you like, for the 10-year rate to keep pushing higher. But also it needs to be supported by the data. And at the moment, of course, the market is moving along with this idea that the U.S. exceptionalism is here to stay. But we probably need more evidence from the data to support that price action. But sadly, we've seen a pretty big move at the moment, and just need to be mindful of that risk.
Yeah, and just as they've revised the U.S. up, the IMF has revised Europe down ever so slightly. So this year has gone from 0.9% growth to 0.8%. Next year they've taken it down from 1.7% to 1.5%. Obviously a lot of it depends on confidence. I haven't seen the ZOO survey from today. Have you seen it? What's that telling us?
Well, I suppose it's less negative than before, but it's still not very impressive. We've seen an improvement in April from 35.5 previously to 42.9. So less bad than previously expected. But I think that the takeaway, including what your comment to the IMF, is that we still have Europe, where the growth engine of Europe and Germany, if you like, is the one that is still not firing on all cylinders, and a flat outcome basically is what's driving that downgrade for Europe's outlook. In saying that, it's what the IMF is also pointing out, which has also been evident in recent activity readings, particularly in those manufacturing PMI. We've seen there's a bit of an upturn in terms of the global growth outlook and cyclicality, if you like, of activity, and that's really reflected in manufacturing now, where we've seen improvements in China. Also in Europe, as well as Japan, still performing quite well. So there is evidence that the global economy is starting to improve. But the question is, or the big question mark is, whether it can be sustained. And that's where China in particular is super important, in addition to, of course, Germany and Europe. But
well, that was interesting. So that brings us on to China's numbers yesterday, because GDP growing at 5.3% year on year in Q1. Fixed asset investment was a bit higher than expected as well. But they've been let down domestically by retail sales and industrial production. But I mean, as far as exports are concerned, it looks like good news.
Yes. So there's a couple of points to make on that. One, when you look at the Q1 GDP growth beat expectations, but the monthly readings, particularly the March readings that we got alongside those GDP prints, show that there's been a slowdown in terms of that momentum, and in particular in terms of industrial production, and the consumer is still very anemic and shy and not spending. So this dynamic of whether this growth or performance can continue in China is questionable if you think that there's been a slowdown in that industrial production number in particular. So at the moment, what's propelling the Chinese economy is that a big level of investment that is coming from the government side. And then what we're not seeing yet is other parts of the economy gaining confidence and providing their own support to the economy. So in particular, the consumer and private investment, it remains very, very anemic. Here's a question mark in terms of the policies that China's using to support its economy. It's very much supply driven, very much on the investment side, and not enough in terms of providing more ammunition, if you like, for the consumer to become more confident. And that's where the property sector issues continue to be a massive headwind as well.
House prices fell 2.2% over the last year. It's very hard to get optimistic on your consumer spending if you're watching your house value fall, isn't it? So what about the UK then? There's a bit of a change in tune, isn't there? Just as Jerome Powell is saying, well, you know, maybe it's going to take longer, Andrew Bailey and the Bank of England are basically saying, I'll wait till after the Fed. They seem to have changed direction now. I'm wondering if that is because they had a bit of a shocker of an unemployment number. So it's gone from 3.9% unemployment to 4.2%. That's quite a shift. And then conveniently, there's Andrew Bailey saying at the IMF that, there's strong evidence inflation is falling. And we'll find out for sure because we get inflation numbers later today. I'm wondering if he's saying, yes, inflation is falling. Well, let's hope so, because those unemployment numbers are looking pretty bad. We'd better do something about it.
Yes. And then there's the caveat that when it comes to the labour market survey in the UK, not many people are answering the survey. So there's a little bit of volatility and reliability in terms of those numbers. So I think that for one, will make the central bank a little bit cautious not to jump the gun, if you like. We need to see, again, more evidence that through the noise, there's a downtrend, or rather an uptrend, in the unemployment rate. And then the other thing to note as well is that linked to the labor market, we also had an upward surprise in terms of wages growth, 6% instead of 5.8 expected. So that stickiness, if you like, of wages is a concern, and it's feeding into that concern when it comes to inflation. That is not just the headline and the core reading that matters, but it's also the composition. And that's where services inflation still remains very elevated, not just in the UK, but it's a similar theme here in Australia. And that's something that, again, will also keep the central banks cautious in terms to being too quick.
So you don't think the Bank of England is going to move forward then on expectations for a cut?
Well, our sense is that we still think that August is probably a good time for have enough evidence for the Bank of England to start thinking about rate cuts. And I think the other debate, which again is linked to not only the UK, but if you see this services inflation proving sticky, then maybe it also has implications in terms of how quickly central banks would ease. So maybe they take the foot off the pedal, but they won't be aggressive in the rate cuts if you see the services inflation elevated as well.
August makes total sense, because they're looking at this talk of October as being the election. So that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Drop the election, hold the election. The phrase at the IMF seemed to be moving in the right direction. So Andrew Bailey said it. Tiff Macklem from the Bank of Canada also said inflation was moving in the right direction. Although you'd have to say it's slow, isn't it? They had their core inflation numbers out. Year on year is 2%. Okay, that's low, but it's only moved there from 2.1%. The headline rate actually ticked up a little, didn't it, to to 2.9% year on year.
Yes, and the trim mean, it came at 3% year on year instead of 3.1 expected. So it's moving in the right direction. But again, the last bit that you need in terms of getting to the inflation goal is proving to be the hardest, and it's taking longer. But in terms of the dynamics of the Canadian economy, we're also seeing the economy slowing down, and we're seeing the labor market showing signs of weakness. So again, those ingredients, unlike what we're seeing in the US, are coming into place for the Bank of Canada to start contemplating rate cuts in the second half of this year.
Right. Now, New Zealand's CPI today as well. So is it also moving in the right direction?
Yes, it is. But again, for New Zealand, it's the same argument. It's not just the headline, but it's also important of the details of those inflation numbers. You know, we've seen the non-tradables, which again is expected to rise. So it makes that challenge of bringing that core reading down in New Zealand. But what is important as well is that in terms of the expectations of what the bank had, inflation is coming down, but perhaps not as quickly as we all would like. But what is also very important when it comes to New Zealand is that we've seen quite a significant downturn in terms of activity readings in recent weeks. So that favors the view that whilst inflation is slowing, as economic activity is also expected to slow down more significantly, then we are likely to see an acceleration in the decline of inflation in New Zealand. So officially, our colleagues in New Zealand still expect a November rate cut, but certainly they have actually raised the comments that if this, you know, slowdown in activity and deterioration in the market continues and the economy continues, then it may well be the case that we may see rate cuts sooner than November. No. So something to keep an eye on.
Right, UK CPI, we've already mentioned that's out today. We get March CPI for the Eurozone, but it's the final version, so it probably won't change much, if at all. And that's enough numbers for the day, really, today, isn't it? And we get more central bank speakers, Isabel Schnabel and Christine Lagarde from the ECB, more from Andrew Bailey. I feel like we've heard everything we need to hear over the last 24 hours, most of it from the IMF. But anyway, we'll see what people have to say. But otherwise, relatively quiet today. But, you know, still quite a few CPI numbers out there to pay attention to. So,
yes, New Zealand during our time zone, and then the UK ones are the ones to watch out for. And again, the details will be important, particularly that services inflation, for instance, UK, in the UK. Yeah. You know, if it still has a 6% handle, you know, the Bank of England won't be contemplating rate cuts anytime soon.
Good to talk. Catch you next time. Thanks, Rodrigo. Great.
Cheers, Phil.
And look, we will continue to move in the right direction as well. We'll be moving till tomorrow morning when we're back with another edition of The Morning Call, possibly with Rodrigo. He shouldn't have been on today. We've stuffed up the schedule. Someone's very unhappy because they got out of bed unnecessarily this morning, which means Rodrigo might have to do tomorrow morning as well. But that's it for me. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. See you tomorrow morning anyway. Have a great day.